This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the state of play among Democrats running for their party's presidential nomination and the fallout from U.S. President Donald Trump's impeachment and subsequent acquittal by the Senate. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. After the first two primary contests, analysts say there is little clarity regarding a Democratic frontrunner, other than the fact that Bernie Sanders narrowly won the New Hampshire primary. Sanders, a self-described Democratic socialist who is not even a registered Democrat, was in a virtual tie with moderate Pete Buttigieg, former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, after the first nominating contest in the Midwestern state of Iowa. The Iowa caucuses, as they are known, were marred by a technology breakdown that delayed results for days and threatened to undermine confidence in the primary process. Buttigieg, a moderate, also had a strong showing in New Hampshire, coming in second place. Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat from the Midwestern state of Minnesota, finished in a surprise third place in New Hampshire, catapulting her campaign to the center of the Democratic race. Perhaps the most surprising and disappointing was the fifth place finish of former Vice President Joe Biden, who also did not do well in Iowa, coming in fourth. He is hoping for a comeback in the upcoming contests in Nevada and South Carolina, where African Americans and Latinos make up a larger part of the demographic. Shortly after the New Hampshire results were announced, two candidates dropped out of the race, entrepreneur Andrew Yang and Senator Michael Bennett, Democrat of Colorado. Former New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg is not competing in the first four contests, but his shadow over the Democratic primary process looms large, given his unlimited amount of spending on ads and his potential appeal to not only a wide swath of Democrats, but also independents and moderate Republicans. Should former Vice President Joe Biden not do well in South Carolina or Nevada, some Democrats are looking to him to fill the gap. Meantime, in the wake of his acquittal in the Senate impeachment trial, U.S. President Donald Trump is testing the rule of law and exacting revenge against those he feels betrayed him. He besmirched and ousted Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, the National Security Council's top Ukraine expert and a decorated veteran, for his testimony during the impeachment inquiry. In addition, four career federal prosecutors withdrew from a case against Roger Stone, a personal friend of President Trump, who was convicted for lying to Congress and witness tampering in connection with the Robert Mueller investigation of Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. President Trump tweeted that the recommended sentence of between 7 to 9 years behind bars was too harsh, so the Justice Department proposed a more lenient sentence. The president's interference in the Justice Department, which is supposed to be independent of political pressure, raised alarm bells among career Justice Department officials and some lawmakers. Well, joining us to discuss this and to read the tea leaves from the New Hampshire primary results are none other than our two veteran political analysts, John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Great to be here.
So, John Fortier, we were at these microphones a few weeks ago. Vice President Joe Biden was up there in the national polls, but he didn't do very well. So I'd like to get your sense of where things stand now after New Hampshire and Iowa. What are the implications? What have we learned about where the Democratic race for the president is going?
Well, there are a lot of shifting sands. I do think Bernie Sanders has risen to be something of a front runner, but a little bit of a mixed front runner. Did very well in Iowa, won by a certain measure, at least by the popular vote, and won in New Hampshire. Joe Biden did poorly in both states and really could be in danger of leaving the race if he does not come back, especially in South Carolina with African-American voters. And then you have some new candidates who've risen up. You point to Pete Buttigieg, who did very well, won Iowa by the delegate count and came very close in New Hampshire, and Amy Klobuchar, who did especially well in New Hampshire, surprising. And then finally, Mike Bloomberg, who is a candidate who is not competing at this moment but will be competing on Super Tuesday, and he has brought all of his money to the race and has created an enormous organization with ads across all of these states where others might have a hard time competing. So you do have a Bernie Sanders doing well and leading by many measures, but you have all these other candidates moving up and Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren to some extent moving down.
to you, Jim Kessler. How do you read the tea leaves so far, with Sanders coming in relatively on top and then Biden taking quite a hit?
It's muddled right now. Traditionally, Iowa and New Hampshire has winnowed down the field in past Democratic primaries, usually to just two or three candidates. It did not do it this time. There are six candidates left who feel that they have some legitimate shot of winning the nomination. Number six is Mike Bloomberg, who will be getting in the race in earnest in a couple of weeks. Not great for the front runners. Obviously, Joe Biden had a disappointing performance. Bernie Sanders did well enough, but you know, he got 49% in Iowa in 2016. He got 26% in 2020. He got 60% in New Hampshire in 2016, which was the largest vote total of any Democrat since John F. Kennedy in 1960 in the New Hampshire primary. More than half of his support disappeared. He ended up at just above 25%. So one of the things that you're seeing is Democratic voters are saying, we're not ready yet to choose a nominee. We want to hear more from these candidates.
So, John Fortier, I assume they want to hear more from people like Amy Klobuchar and maybe Pete Buttigieg, newcomers, in a sense, to the national scene. But they are known for not having great appeal within these very large voting blocks, African-American voters who are part of the base of the Democratic Party, and then Hispanics. So how do you see them navigating going forward?
Iowa and New Hampshire are two of the whitest states in America, and in the Democratic Party especially, there's a disconnect between the electorate there and the electorate that they'll face nationwide. We start to remedy that with Nevada with a large Hispanic vote and South Carolina with a very large African-American vote. Joe Biden had done very well and has done very well in the polls with especially African-Americans, but also Hispanics. His strength really came from moderate whites plus that coalition that made him the front runner in the polls. There is doubt today whether he will retain that or not. If he wants to stay in the race, he's going to have to go to South Carolina especially, do well there, probably win or come in a close second. Otherwise, I think that support will start to go other places. It is true that many of the other candidates, Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg, others, have all had problems getting the black vote. And it may be split among many, many people. But Joe Biden is the wild card out there, not having done well. We'll have to see if he really can maintain that after this not very good showing in two states.
So back to you, Jim Kessler. You certainly have your finger on the pulse of the Biden campaign. He doesn't go into South Carolina with a lot of momentum, even if he has a natural constituency there. How do you think he's going to do? And if he doesn't do well, where is that support likely to go?
Well, it's South Carolina or bust for Joe Biden. If he doesn't win South Carolina, he probably has to immediately drop out of the race. Super Tuesday, where 1,400 delegates are going to be selected, is 3 days later. So he's got to win South Carolina. But even before that, there's the Nevada caucuses, and he needs to do well enough there so that the support that he is losing right now in South Carolina, that it stops. Where does it go? Look, I think the South Carolina support, just realize that Mike Bloomberg is not competing in South Carolina. He's not on the ballot, or else I think some of that black support would go to Mike. Where it goes now is really anybody's question, because none of the candidates that are remaining, other than Mike Bloomberg, really has any history of winning minority voters. With Pete Buttigieg, like, he's really struggled there. Amy Klobuchar, voters just don't know who she is. So she is trying to build the plane and fly the plane at the same time. And then you've got Bernie Sanders, who just traditionally has not done well there, and Elizabeth Warren, who is scuffling along. So it's very possible that South Carolina is another inconclusive primary in which four or five candidates say, well, I did well enough to keep moving on, but nobody really came out dominating it, winning a lot of delegates.
Well, meantime, John Fortier, all of this confusion and rather murky picture on the Democratic side, in a sense, helps President Trump and his reelection campaign. How do you see his strategy going forward? We know that the Republicans would love to paint all Democrats as somehow socialists. They've been using that term, label, which is, of course, a misnomer, but they are trying to scare voters. Once again, your sense of the Republican strategy.
Well, I think generally the president's team feels pretty good about where he has been in the last few weeks. He's in a better position than he has been. Now, anything like Donald Trump, there are ups and downs even within a week. So the State of the Union, I think many people thought, was a speech that highlighted some of his strengths, that he was going to run on a good economy, that he had some things he worked with Democrats on, and then he had some issues that were very divisive between the two parties. But he came out of that strong. His numbers in the polls are really at a high for him. And I emphasize for him because they're not as high as they should be. They're not that high, but he's moved them up from where they are. And I mean, the economy is very, very strong. So I think the president has a lot going for him. I think it's likely he's at least going to be competitive in this race. And I do think that the president's team is hoping for a weaker Democratic candidate. A Bernie Sanders, I think, is going to be the hardest candidate for Democrats to rally behind. It'll be easy for the president to make that message stick about a candidate who has some history with socialism and has some history outside of the Democratic Party. But broadly speaking, I think the president's in a pretty good position compared to where he has been, but still not anyway ahead of the game because his numbers are lower than they should be.
Jim Kessler, as far as the State of the Union, many people say that there were a lot of falsehoods. He said the economy is strong, certainly by the stock market indicator, but not really in terms of middle and lower class pocketbooks. There were lots of falsehoods, even with respect to health care, that he says I'm in favor of including people with pre-existing conditions. This is really the opposite of what he has been saying. Nonetheless, how do you see President Trump and the Republicans? And certainly their strategy is trying to paint all Democrats, particularly if Bernie Sanders becomes the nominee, as socialists. This is seems to be what they want to do.
So I think Trump has to be seen as the favorite going into 2020. The economy is good. It's not great, but it's good. It's probably good enough for, you know, the typical president to win a re-election. Yes, he'll call every Democratic socialist, but one Democrat is a socialist. Bernie Sanders is a socialist. And it is clear that that is the candidate that Donald Trump wants to run against. And in some states, anybody is allowed to vote in a primary, not just Democrats. South Carolina, which is going to vote in a couple weeks, anybody can vote. There's already a concerted effort, a well-financed effort, to get Republicans to go out and vote in the Democratic primary and to vote for Bernie Sanders so that he can get the momentum going into Super Tuesday and get the candidate that Donald Trump would really like. And we know that Trump is not above meddling in elections. I don't think he has to go as far as Russia to do it this time. He just needs to go to South Carolina, and it's perfectly legal. You can encourage Republicans to come out and vote. If you look at the chairmen and chairwomen of the various counties in South Carolina, they are trying to get people to come out and vote in these Democratic primaries, and they feel that they can make a difference. Will they? Who knows? But this is a plan they have so that Democrats nominate the most unelectable person against Donald Trump, and that person is Bernie Sanders.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. And we're discussing results of the early Democratic primary contests and the fallout from President Donald Trump's impeachment trial. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Well, here's a big shout out to our valued Facebook fan, Muhammad Ali from Sri Lanka. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, John Fortier. One more question about Bernie Sanders supporters from your perspective. I understand they're very much backing Bernie Sanders. They don't like to even consider another candidate, even though Bernie Sanders himself has said, whoever wins the nomination, we all must get behind that person to defeat Donald Trump. But some people are concerned. I mean, but where really do they go if they don't vote for the eventual nominee? Or could they sit on their hands and become a problem for the Democrats?
Look, I think most of the time that people come home to their party and most Democratic voters who cast a ballot for Bernie Sanders, if he's not the nominee, are going to go vote for a Democrat. It could hurt around the edges and some enthusiasm. I guess the real disaster scenario for Democrats would be somehow a convention or something that is very divided where Bernie Sanders feels as if he's had the nomination taken away from him, or perhaps that a third party candidate gets in the race when he's running. Short of that, I think ultimately most Bernie Sanders supporters will probably come back to the Democratic Party.
So Jim Kessler, Bernie Sanders says out loud, look, we're going to get behind any nominee to defeat Donald Trump. But you don't get that sense maybe from the supporters, those that I know who have spoken to some of his supporters. They seem so set on him and not willing necessarily. How do you see that, and how dangerous is that for Democrats?
Most will come along, but, you know, they're the Bernie bros out there, right, as they're called. And
the true believers.
They're the true believers. And no matter what happens in this primary, they will believe that Sanders was robbed of the nomination. They said he was robbed of the nomination last time. Hillary Clinton beat him by 3.8 million votes and by a margin of 57% to 43%. And they said he was robbed. So there is a certain conspiracy theory element within the Democratic Party that most of them have gravitated towards Bernie Sanders. A few of them are with some of the candidates like Andrew Yang, who also just dropped out of the race. But that's part of the mix there. I just want to add one other thing. The mainstream wing of the Democratic Party does not have a numerator problem. It has a denominator problem. If you looked at the New Hampshire results, the three moderates, leading moderates, got 53% of the vote. And the two leading candidates on the further left, Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, they got 39% of the vote, with the other 8% kind of split all sorts of different ways. But the moderates were split three ways. And when Michael Bloomberg enters the race, they could be split four ways. And the progressive to socialist wing of the party right now is split two ways. So if after Super Tuesday, that mainstream wing does not coalesce behind a single candidate, you could really see someone sneaking in, you know, Bernie sneaking in from the far left and getting a plurality of delegates, not a majority, but a plurality. And then you'd see havoc at the convention in Milwaukee in July.
So that's a little ominous.
Yeah, I didn't want to leave you with just good news now on this subject.
Okay, but the moderates right now, they have the numbers, combined numbers.
They have the numbers in states, frankly, that are more progressive than other states, because when you look at minority voters, Latino voters and African-American voters, they're overwhelmingly Democrat, but they're also overwhelmingly moderate and mainstream. So the moderates even did well in New Hampshire and in Iowa, where the Democratic primary voters there are pretty far to the left. But if you're splitting that vote four ways or three ways, and the other side is really splitting it, their wing, two ways or just one way, well, you do the math.
All right. Well, let's wake me up after Super Tuesday.
Okay.
And when we'll have you both back at these microphones to discuss the state of play. Back to you, John Fortier. Let's look at the Senate acquittal of President Trump, where we had one Republican senator, Mitt Romney, who voted to convict him. This has incurred the wrath, of course, of President Trump against Mitt Romney, against many others. As I said in my introduction, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who was unceremoniously walked out of the White House for merely responding to a subpoena and testifying at the impeachment inquiry and saying the truth about what he heard on that excellent telephone call from July 25th that President Trump had with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. We're looking at what some people are calling a retribution tour. You know, President Trump is crowing that he was acquitted, and everybody now that spoke against him or acted against him, he is lashing out. What are the long-term effects, do you think, of this Senate acquittal on the democratic system of governance, the integrity of which relies on these checks and balances between the legislative and executive branch?
Well, look, I think there'll be fallout in a lot of different directions. I think the big picture will be, as the president has wanted, he got the headline that the president was acquitted. And I also think it's a message that impeachment is a political process in part and really depends on having a broad consensus, including some of the other party, to remove the president. That doesn't mean we'll never do it again. We're a divided country. But I do think that Republicans will make the case that this was something primarily supported by Democrats. Yes, there was one Republican in the Senate, but it was a Democratic effort that didn't rise to the level of getting a supermajority of people saying, let's take this person out of office. And I think the argument was very effective for the president that there's an election coming up, that ultimately, let's not short-circuit that election. Let the people decide that the people can remove Donald Trump. They still can vote on this issue or on others in a few months. And the president comes out of this, I think, broadly in a better place than he did before.
Well, the president might come out broadly in a better place, but many are questioning, Jim Kessler, whether or not the Senate, the Congress comes out in a better place. Many of the Republican lawmakers in particular didn't defend their branch of government, that the behavior that they, let's say, condoned by President Trump, they would never have done that if a Democratic president engaged in the same unlawful type of behavior. What is your sense of, you know, where we go from here and what the impact will be? Is the Senate lowering the bar for permissible conduct for future presidents?
Well, of course they are. The outcome of this is not a surprise. I thought this was a very, very disappointing moment for the U.S. Congress and the Senate in particular. It's not just that the president wasn't removed. I understand not removing the president. That is a big, big decision to make. If I was a senator, I would have voted to remove him. But I wish that more Republican senators stood up and said what he did was awful.
And how about witnesses and documents, which they rejected, which is normally part of any normal trial?
Right. So what we saw here was, instead of really trying to find out what happened and try to ascertain the truth, the strategy was, how do we survive and win this thing? And even if in the end the vote would have been the same, I would have loved to see the Senate, the august body that it is, take it seriously and at least say there were a lot of things here that were disturbing. You know, it didn't rise to the level of removing the president, but I want to send a warning to the president, to others, like this behavior cannot happen again. But they didn't do that. And I think they basically just gave him a pass to act however he wants to act over the next 10 months and possibly the next 4 years and 10 months.
Well, and speaking of which, he is certainly engaging in this type of behavior. It seems that way, John Fortier. He's acting as if he can do whatever he wants. He has now been alleged to have interfered in the Justice Department in the recent sentencing of Roger Stone, who was convicted of lying to Congress, of witness tampering. But he was convicted, and he is interfering in the Justice Department, which is supposed to be independent. And then you mentioned elections, and certainly that makes sense. Well, let's just all vote. It's an upcoming election before removing him. But as Jim said, not even a word about the type of conduct that he, that is the president, engaged in, strong-arming a foreign ally to get dirt on his political opponent. So going forward now, people are concerned about interference in the election, not just foreign interference, which he feels he's able to, without any kind of consequences, to court, internal political interference, that is the Republican Party engaging in disinformation campaigns on social media and so forth.
I see people's worries and people have concerns, but I don't believe that our election is in any way going to be illegitimate in the fall. We have issues to worry about. We have protections we're trying to put in place. But I think this election is going to be fundamentally about the American people, and they're going to weigh in as to whether they like the president or not on a variety of things, including this. So the case was made publicly. It's very hard to remove a president unless you persuade the other party. We're a divided country. But the election is there for people to say, do we want this person here another 4 years or not? And they will speak in November.
Well, you get the last word, Jim Kessler. The election is certainly the way for people to express themselves, but some Democrats and others who felt that the impeachment trial should have had a proper format with witnesses, documents, and so forth are concerned that now the president is, in a sense, unleashed and he is going beyond his normal norms of the presidency and lashing out and trying to interfere in a number of processes in which he should not. And I would think that people are concerned because Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has not agreed to take up any election security bills. Almost one could say, if one didn't know any better, that maybe he doesn't want to do that because such security election bills would not favor the Republicans.
We are definitely going to have foreign interference in the election coming up. We had foreign interference in the 2016 election that probably decided the outcome of the race. I'm not saying that it was collusion between Trump and the Russians, but when John Podesta's emails were released the day of the Access Hollywood tapes were, you know, released on Trump, a Trump scandal in the brewing, that was foreign interference. And I think we have unleashed the president even further. And the latest where he's recommending a light sentence on Roger Stone, I mean, the recommendation was a sentence between 7 and 9 years. That was too soft. Roger Stone should probably be in prison for 20 years. So I do not think this is a great moment for lawfulness in our political system right now.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. And thanks to Kim Lewis for booking our guests. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.